She knew he'd always been a sloppy reader, and this was the only way to penetrate the book's hoary legends and lessons. Dante had the unflagging sense he was moving toward a higher understanding, though he didn't yet know what shape it would take, or even exactly how he was getting there. He was taking more from the book than a base memorization of its tangled narrative, that was for certain. It was like the very act of confronting the confusion the book was stirring in his mind was making the view of the world he'd held before he started reading it seem laughably small. However naked it might leave him, he felt ready to leave it behind, throw it away like a pair of pants that had grown too small. Dante looked up from its pages and into the mildewed timbers of their room, giving his eyes a moment to rest before he turned back to the beginning and started over again. Blaze worked something loose from his throat, spat it from the window, and leaned out to see if he'd hit anyone. "Boredom doesn't bleed, you know," the boy said. Dante went on staring at the ceiling, lost in whether the book meant the ether and nether as real things, or if they were more a metaphor of some sort, and if so, of what? Take their names. Was nether more important because it encompassed ether, or was it less important because it depended on it? Or were they meant more as antonyms or complements? Already he'd read them so often they'd begun to lose all meaning. He glanced at Blaze, realizing he'd said something a minute ago. "Is that what you needed a bodyguard for? To protect you from dying of boredom? Boredom doesn't have a heart. Well, other than church. But I can't stab boredom's heart, I mean. So if it was all this boredom you were afraid of..." Blaze went on in the leisurely manner of someone used to long days of sitting around killing time while he waited to be hired. "I don't think I can help you." "I'm not afraid of anything," Dante said, squinting at him. "And it's not boredom I'm concerned about. Maybe you hired me to fight that chair that sunk its teeth into your ass. I'm in danger," Dante, dropping his eyes back to the page.
"Of bed sores, maybe."
Blaze leaned back in the window frame he used as a recovery nest from the late-night sentry duty he pulled in the common room, keeping close eye on the beer. He let out a long breath. 4 days cooped in this room and whispering in libraries. I haven't seen a thing. I think my sword's rusted to its scabbard." He planted his hands on its grip and mimed being unable to pull it free.
"Gods, no!"
"You're being paid for it, aren't you?
Is someone chasing you? That it? From whatever village you ran off from?"
"No. Probably a priest's son," Blaze said, tugging at his lower lip. "Nobody cares that much about scripture, unless he needs to prove Dad wrong. He's probably trying to drag you back to the chapel and bring you upright."
"I'm not a priest, son,"
Dante said, going back to the beginning of the paragraph he hadn't been able to read through Blaze's prattle.
"You're right. A priest would come with lawmen, not daggers in the dark."
He squirmed on the sill, staring at Dante through the dusky room.
"You stole something."
"Bread, maybe," Dante said, bringing a hand halfway to his chest. He kept his eyes on the text.
"Oh, more precious than bread. No baker's got the time and money to be chasing after some kid. Not that he wouldn't hang you if you had the chance. I'm trying to read."
Blaze made a thinking noise.
"It's just money, isn't it? You've been rolling drunks in the alleys. Everyone's got to eat, I guess. But if you've got the watch after you, I think I've got a right to know."
Dante looked up. Blazer's face was blanked by the lights shining behind him through the window.
"Why do you think that?" Dante said. "You are! You're stealing. That's rich. No pun."
"How did you know?"
"I guessed,"
Blaze said, prodding the sill with a small knife he kept around for apparently no more than paring his nails. Dante laid a finger in the book to mark his place and swiveled in his chair.
"No, you didn't."
"You're right.
I followed you.
You followed me?
The chair banged against the boards of the floor as he stood.
Blaze regarded him a second, then turned back to his nails. The money had to come from somewhere. It's not like you do any work.
You followed me?
Isn't that what I said?
Blaze stood up and met Dante's eyes. Gashin swinging balls. You spend all day in here reading, then the one time I can be of any use, you're out sneaking around by yourself. What am I protecting you from? Paper cuts? What am I doing here?
Dante frowned, his self-righteousness draining away.
He hadn't thought about what Blaze would think about their arrangement, but he sounded awfully proud for a 15-and-a-half-year-old beanpole, who Dante knew he could probably beat up in a fair fight.
It's not just stealing, Dante said instead.
What else? Robbing? Maybe some larceny?
You talk a lot for hired help, you know that. You're not paid by the word.
Blaze rolled his eyes and sat back down in the window.
Whatever. It's your money.
You see this book? Dante said, not caring he was shouting. He leaned over the windowsill and shoved the image of the white tree in Blaze's face.
No, why don't you bring it a little closer?
I took this from one of the old temples of Aron. They want it back.
Looks spooky enough, doesn't it?
Blaze flicked the cover with his nail.
Who's after you? A bunch of ghosts? That would explain why I've never seen them.
Dante glared at him. A dark speck swam over his right eye, and he blinked until it went away. He no longer knew what he was trying to prove. Conversation had always felt like a strange art, and in the weeks since he left the village, he'd spoken no more than was necessary to buy things. That and the threats he'd made about the book to the guard.
You're being stupid, he said. You're the one talking about getting murdered over a book.
Just be quiet, Dante said. He righted the chair and sat down and opened the book. He stared blankly at its first page, massaging his temples with one hand.
So what's so special they'd want to kill you for it?
Blaze said at half the volume of their last exchange. He dropped from the sill and craned over Dante's shoulder.
Get off me! I'm not on you!
Well, don't breathe so hard.
Stop breathing.
Have fun dragging my corpse out of here, then.
Dante smirked into the clean white pages. If the book had been there since the third scour, it had to be a century old, or more. Other than a bit of residual dust, it showed no signs of age.
It wouldn't be the first.
Oh, sure, Blaze said, pulling upright. He wandered back to the window.
And I'm the Queen of Garsk.
I killed two people before I hired you, Dante said. He realized he'd meant it as a boast. His hands curled into fists.
Well, one. One of them must not have died when I stabbed him, and the other was a kneeling.
You killed a kneeling and stabbed some guy?
Why haven't you been knighted?
Dante half heard him through a memory of the pain-clenched face of the man he'd left for dead in the grass beneath the clouds. Blaze saw his expression and gave him a sharp look.
What was it like, then?
He said, voice lined with irony, in case Dante was kidding.
I don't know. Come on, tough guy. They both tried to kill me first.
That's not what I asked.
At the end,
Dante said, rubbing his finger along the pebbled leather of the book's cover.
There's a kind of gurgle, a bubble of their final breath, and you wonder how they lived so long at all.
Sick,
Blaze said. He drew his sword and swooshed it through the air.
Why do people have to die at all?
He said, but he kept swinging his sword, slashing the space between himself and Dante, air whistling over his steel, like the wind in the pines. The sun had dropped into the jaws of the western mountains before the monks kicked them out of their cloisters a few nights later, suggesting if Dante had such interest in their order, he should speak with them rather than poring over old manuscripts that really didn't reflect the modern understanding of Menok. Dante thanked them and made vague noises about doing so. Crazy old idiots. How could the gods change when they were already perfect? The door to the room at the inn creaked open while Dante was still trying to insert the key. His breath caught. Blaze shouldered him out of the way, side sword ringing as he wrenched it free. He edged into the room, leading the way with the point of his blade. The only room Dante could afford was little bigger than one of the monk's cells, and even before he lit a candle, it was obvious there was no one else inside. Their few possessions were scattered on the floor, the table tipped on its side, books thrown from the shelf, lying face down with their pages spread like the bodies of birds. The pallets had been gutted, scattered from corner to corner.
"Funny," Blaze said, stirring the spilled straw with his sword. "I don't remember wrecking up the place."
"They were here," Dante said.
The kid shuttered the window and turned to face him.
"For the book. Do you have anything else worth a pair of pennies?"
"Could have been thieves," Blaze said, eyeing him. "I hear you can't walk down an alley in this town without bumping into one. Grab your stuff."
"Okay," he said,
and stood there.
"Done."
Dante ignored him and started scooping up his gear.
He smoothed the pages of the tossed-off books and piled them in his pack.
"You're serious," Blaze said.
"Very."
"What, some hired thug comes poking around and you light out like a rabbit?"
"If that's what rabbits do, then rabbits are smarter than you are." Dante bundled up his dwindling supply of candles. Senselessly, some appear to have been struck in half.
"It really could have been vagabonds."
"It wasn't vagabonds."
"Well, if you're so sure it's some shadowy cabal, doesn't running away mean they win?"
"In what sense," Dante said, raking up the last of his notes, "can I be said to win if I'm beheaded in my sleep?"
"Now, I don't understand that at all."
Blaze glanced at the open door, then shut and bolted it.
"What about standing your ground, sword in hand?"
"I don't have a sword."
"Symbolistically."
"That's for idiots. Idiots who don't know anything." Dante stood and looked around for anything he'd missed, dismayed at the sight of his old clothes shredded and mixed up in the straw. He liked wearing them when he could get away with looking like he'd been run over by a herd of pigs.
"Let's go."
"I know plenty," Blaze said, setting his mouth. He put his sword away but kept it loose in its sheath. They bustled down the stairs.
"My dad knew how to read."
"Do you?
What's your point?"
They exited the inn, and Dante led them up the larger of the roads that crossed outside. The evening had grown brisk, and their breath billowed from their mouths in a visible fog. A team of horses rattled past, forcing them into the gutter. The heat of the animals' bodies rushed past them, followed by a flickering wind that grew steady a moment later, like the team was dragging a storm head behind it.
"We're being followed," Blaze murmured a few minutes later. "Don't look back.
Do you believe me now?"
Anyone who didn't would be some kind of moron.
After a quarter of an hour of brisk walking, Dante began to get winded. Blaze seemed fine, and Dante tried to keep his breathing quiet. His brain wasn't working well enough to take advantage of the fact that they were relatively safe for the moment. The arterials carried decent traffic yet, and would for a few hours more.
He stepped over a reeking puddle, and was glad for the minimal lighting of corner torches and the half-moon.
He had to think. They couldn't just walk forever.
"We can't just walk forever," Blaze said. "Yeah, I'd figure that out.
They'd follow us wherever we go."
"They've got to sleep, too."
"Even if we somehow gave them the slip tonight, do you really think that's going to stop them?"
Blaze glanced briefly over his shoulder. "They found you twice now." Dante touched the knife in his belt.
Bressel's big enough to get ourselves lost in.
Oh, that's worked so well so far.
Well, what do you suggest? He spat, then looked around to see if anyone had heard. The street was quiet. A few brisk footsteps and the occasional clatter of a team or the reeling song of a drunk.
Stand and fight, Blaze said, resting his hand on the pommel of his sword. Once we don't have anyone right on our ass, we'll have plenty of time to figure out our next step.
That's crazy.
Is it? You've killed people before, haven't you? Why run this time?
Dante shook his head, feeling pale. You're just a kid, and the only thing I know about fighting is it helps to stab them in the back. We'd be slaughtered.
Then let's do that.
Getting slaughtered is not a plan.
Stab them in the back, stupid.
Dante frowned.
I suppose you think we just hide in an alley, then jump out and say boo.
It beats waiting for them to catch us.
Blaze glanced behind them again, brows knitting. At least we take them on our own terms.
How many are there?
Dante pressed a palm against his right eye. The black speck was back.
Two?
Three.
There's another trailing a block behind the first two.
Those are not the world's greatest odds.
Well, make a decision. If we just keep walking, eventually we're going to turn down the wrong street and that'll be it.
Dante shook his head. He never should have stayed in Bressel. For all his reading, he still couldn't do anything. For all the times the book's authority had made him feel holy, it wasn't like learning about history and creation stories that contradicted what he'd been taught would help him stand against armed men. There weren't any instructions in it. Nothing about the proper way to sacrifice a calf to gain a godly blessing. No words of power, no maps for a pilgrimage to sacred lands and artifacts. The mail-shirted man had been real, but Dante's hopes were faint as smoke. There were men after Dante now, men who knew how to kill, and he was nothing more than another kid from the middle of nowhere.
Shit, he said. God's damn son of a bitch.
That about sums it up.
I can't keep doing this, Dante said. My luck's going to run out. Once we get rid of them, I'm running as fast and as far as I can.
Blaze crooked up half his mouth.
I've got strong legs.
Dante shook his head again. Money runs out in a few days.
I don't think that will stop them from sticking cinders under my toenails and chucking me in the river when I can't tell them where you've gone.
Gross, Dante said, then shut his mouth. If Blaze wanted to throw in his lot with Dante for a while longer, that was his business.
So what's your big plan?
You strip down and run at them naked while I circle around behind them.
Shut up.
When we get to this corner, Blaze grinned, we make like we just saw them. You know, get all scared and shouty. Then we run down this alley and hide. When they run past us, we jump out and stab them.
That, Dante said, is a really poor plan.
You've got better.
Not at all, Dante said. They reached the corner a moment later.
Blaze stopped and turned in a slow circle, gesturing broadly at the landmark of a finger-thin spire in the heart of the city.
Dante caught on, shrugging like a stage actor. Blaze glanced back down the street, dropping his jaw when his eyes settled on the men following them, then cried out and darted for the dark mouth of the closest side street. The heels of his boots disappeared into shadow before Dante had the presence of mind to run after him. The footsteps of pursuit rang out immediately from so close behind him, Dante didn't know whether they'd have time to hide. From 20 yards down the alley, Blaze looked back, then seemed to blink right out of existence. Dante's mouth went dry. A ruse. He'd run off, left Dante as bait to make his escape. Then a hand snaked from a doorway he hadn't seen until he'd gone by it. Blaze yanked him from sight, and they huddled in the dark, struggling to slow their panting before the men rounded the corner.
Here,
Blaze whispered.
He handed Dante the little rat sticker he'd been carving the windowsill with a few days ago.
I've got these.
He brandished his knife and the kneeling's dagger.
There weren't much, but next to Blaze's offering, they looked lethal enough.
Throw it at them or something.
Boots echoed down the narrow-windowed walls of the alley. Dante couldn't catch his breath. The grey figures of three men strode by, swords in hand, and he made a rodent-like peep. He felt Blaze's hand on his shoulder, and then he was being pulled back into the street, and his hands were shaking so hard he was sure he'd drop both knives. Blaze lashed his sword from its sheath and raked it across the back of the trailing man. The others spun, points raised, and Dante cocked his arm and hurled the knife.
It winked in the moonlight, then somehow hit and stuck in his target's shoulder.
The man shouted and yanked it free, hurling it back at Dante, but he threw it like you'd throw a stone, and its butt bounced from Dante's chest. The third man closed with Blaze, and they circled like crabs, trading exploratory strikes. Neither of the other men were exactly giants, but they were full-grown, and as Dante's opponent recovered and menaced him with his 2-foot blade, he saw how much each inch of reach meant in a fight. Dante pulled the dagger from his belt and waved it in front of him, wondering how it would feel when he lost his hand.
The black mote was back in his eye. He batted at it with his left hand, narrowly avoiding putting out his eye with the point of his knife, and the man across from him laughed and swung.
Dante ducked, hearing the sword whine over his head. Blaze fell back under a harsh assault and bumped him in the shoulder. His man swung again, and when Dante blocked it with the dagger, a sting jolted up his arm so hard his eyes fogged over, and he couldn't tell whether he still held his weapon.
Blackness spread across Dante's eyes, rushing over his vision like ink poured on quiet waters, and he cried out, feeling no pain and not even having seen the man's killing stroke, but knowing he was dying.
He heard cursing then, which probably wasn't uncommon in hell, but also the oafish shuffles of men who've gone blind suddenly and without reason. Dante dropped to his knees and heard blades whiffing the air. Beneath him the earth felt solid as ever. Steel clanged into a stone wall. As he'd passed from the world of the living to this confusing netherland, Dante'd had the presence of mind to keep Blaze's location fixed in the map of his head, well enough to know the boots scraping a few feet in front of him weren't the boy's, and, touch returning to his shock-numbed fingers, enough to know he still held his dagger, he struck out, blind but no more than everyone else, waving the short blade back and forth somewhere around knee level, stabbing out at every stutter of the man's steps. His first swipe missed. The second landed and glanced away, and the third dug deep into yielding flesh. He heard a shriek and screamed back as the man folded into a heap, clubbing Dante's outstretched arm with his falling body. Dante launched himself forward, arms held in front of his chest to prevent himself from being gutted if the guy had his weapon ready, but landed on the man's unguarded torso. He stabbed down with both hands, knives tearing through soft things and thudding into bone until the body's blood was sopping from his fingers and dripping down his face. Not 6 feet to his left, Blaze and the last man struggled, and he heard the tentative squeal of their swords meeting. The man under Dante's knees was dead enough to stop worrying about. He stabbed him again, tasting bile, then flopped back on his ass. He'd lost track of who was Blaze and who was the last enemy standing. Loose gravel grated under his trousers as he scooted back. His eyes grew damp, and then the darkness shimmered in a way he'd only seen light do. Two silhouettes faced each other, blades straining, and then they were whole under the moon and the stars and the torchlight trickling from the main street. Dante planted a palm on the dirt and buried his dagger in the attacker's side. The man twisted away, flicking him across the chin with the very end of his sword. Blaze leaned into his open body and swung sidelong. The sword cut into the softness of the man's side and clicked when it met his spine. The man bent his head, mouth wide. His neck strained into cords, working with some final words he couldn't quite voice. Then he slumped over the sword. His weapon banged against the ground, his hands hanging like gutted fish. He fell and didn't rise.
"Screaming, weeping Lyle," Blaze said, jerking his sword free.
He wiped it on the body, and Dante saw a deep red crease over the boy's left arm, a spreading stain on his upper ribs.
"You're bleeding. Shut up and take his sword. It's a good one."
"I've never used one before," Dante said, putting away his knives. He looked down the empty length of the alley and shuddered.
"You can learn, dummy."
Blazer's mouth drew into a long, thin line as he looked down on the bodies.
He made a closed-mouth gasp from deep down in his throat, and Dante had to turn away to keep from puking. After a few quavering breaths, Dante bent over the man they'd killed together and unbuckled his belt, tightening his throat when his hand brushed the warm body.
He sheathed the dropped sword, then bit his lips and pulled open the body's cloak.
"What are you doing?"
"We're going to need money."
"That's sick," Blaze said, backing up a step.
"You're the one that just killed him," he said.
But Blaze made no move to help.
Dante hurried through the pockets, fishing for coin, then rifled through the clothing of the two other corpses. It wasn't a fortune, but it would last long enough if they were careful. After a moment of staring, he pulled off the least bloody cloak and swung it over his shoulders.
"His cloak, too?"
Blaze wrinkled his nose.
"What are you, a ghoul?"
"We need to leave. Now." Dante stood and headed for the other end of the alley, refusing to let himself run. His legs were shaky and weak beneath him. The whole thing had taken less than 2 minutes. 90-odd seconds for 3 dead bodies and a wall of darkness he couldn't explain. The looted sword bounced against the side of his left knee, and he hoisted his belt over his waist. He tipped his head to the stars, trying to regain his direction. In the weeks he'd lived in Bressel, he'd learned no more than a smattering of its streets. He had the sense you could live there all your life without knowing more than a single district, and had never gotten the hang of which way was which. He picked out the 7-starred bow of Malleus, pointing the way to Joros, the North Star, and led Blaze west at the next intersection, away from the direction of the docks. They moved down a broad street and past cloaked men, armed men, men on horseback, ragged men missing ears or noses and clutching flasks. The unlicensed sword felt like a beacon on his hip. He put it out of his mind. For now, their only worry was putting some distance between themselves and the bodies.
"What are you?"
Blaze asked, and Dante felt his bones try to leap out of his skin. They crossed Fair Street, Bressel's old outer boundary, and the cobbles gave way to dirt.
"I'm fine." "Did you hear me?"
"I'm a 16-year-old man," Dante said flatly.
"Most men I know can't blot out the stars."
"They're there now, aren't they?" Dante said, waving at the whirls of constellations. Blaze grunted and bumped into Dante's shoulder. He gripped Dante's collar, steadying himself, and Dante leaned into the boy's weight. He felt blood seeping through his sleeve.
"Shut up and sit down. I can bind those up."
Blaze didn't say anything, just seated himself on the dirt road and stared at the wooden walls of the rickety 2-story row houses that didn't look any older than 10 or 20 years. Dante cut strips from the bottom of his new cloak and pulled them tight around the boy's forearm. What he really needed was stitches, but Dante had forgotten his needle and thread back at the room. The gash across Blaze's ribs was bleeding more, but wasn't so deep. He let a strip of cloth soak up some blood so it would stick to Blaze's skin, then wrapped another long piece around it.
"I didn't see him hit you,"
Dante said.
Big surprise, Blaze said.
Dante frowned, knotting the cloth over Blaze's shoulder.
The kid was off somewhere else, working something over when he should have his eyes out for the watch or other pursuit.
Dante didn't think it had anything to do with the shock of battle or Blaze's loss of blood. He wanted to say he'd had no control over the darkness, which was true. He wanted to say he had no idea where it had come from, which might not be.
The way it blacked out like ink and then flickered away when Dante's emotions had changed reminded him exactly of a passage around the 20th page of the cycle,
when Starthus the Wise, facing 6 armed warriors, had encased them and himself in a lightless sphere and slain 5 of them one by one.
The last of them then struck Starthus and clouded his mind with fear, causing the sphere to fade at once. A coincidence of patent ridiculousness, since it had said nothing about how Starthus had gone about dropping them in the darkness in the first place. All Dante'd done was try not to drop a load in his trousers. There was no way the mere act of reading the book had somehow limbered up his mind to the point where he could do things like Starthus.
What had it been, then? Trick of the light?
Widespread hysterical blindness, like the kind he'd read afflicted soldiers on the eve of battle so they couldn't fight. The first signs of a degenerative and apparently infectious ocular condition, or a priest watching from the windows, drunk, using parlour tricks to toy with them. Lunar eclipse. Any of those was about as likely as Father Tame strolling down from his constellation and shaking Dante's hand. The one explanation that fit was he'd done something without knowing how he did it, and that was no explanation at all. As wrong as Blaze was to suspect him, Dante knew he was equally powerless to tell him why. They passed from the low, half-mud, half-fieldstone houses inside the West Gate to the low, half-mud, half-fieldstone houses outside the West Gate. This whole range of the city looked like it had been built within the last 5 years. The roofs were mud-caked reeds, the doors flimsy things, firelight visible in the gaps of their frames. Blaze's feet swept over the rinds and pebbles in the roadway.
"Tired?" Dante asked.
Blaze shrugged. "We can't exactly stop here." He nodded, conceding the point.
"We could rest a minute, though."
"Why?" Blaze met Dante's eyes for the first time since the fight. Something dark lingered in his face. His lips curled.
"You too worn out to keep going?"
"I'm fine," Dante said, feeling the dullness in his knees, the burn in the backs of his thighs. "It's just a couple of miles to the woods. We should be all right there for the night."
"Then we'll stop when it's safe."
He had thought there would be some triumph if they survived the first skirmish, but instead of standing back to back against a shared dagger, it had made Blaze hate him.
The wind kicked up, dragging leaves and trade papers and a few forgotten scraps of cloth past their feet. Graying things he was glad not to recognize moldered in the gutters. Since the time Dante'd left the village of his birth, he'd enjoyed his solitude, his total freedom. Other people only intruded on his ability to learn. If Blaze was going to part his company because he was as scared as a little girl about whatever Dante'd done when Dante himself didn't know what that thing was, he wouldn't mark it as a loss.
Open fields showed between the houses after another half mile. Within 2 or more minutes, the last of what could be said to be the city had been replaced by brittle corn stalks and the puzzled moans of cows. The city fires died away, and overhead, 1,000 stars pricked out from the black curtain. A god was there, if the cycle of Orion could be believed, turning the stone, milling the substance that changed men's hearts to darkness.
Chapter 3 They rose with the dawn, and ate a cold breakfast in colder silence. They'd slept back to back, Dante's stolen cloak thrown over them both, and when Blaze stirred, Dante felt him freeze with a jerk before jumping up and jogging some 10 yards off. Face buried under the cloak, Dante heard Blaze slapping his arms, his face, working up the circulation. Dante sat up, glared at the sunlight filtering through the leaves. His legs hurt. So did his hand, where that murk had nearly torn away his knife and his fingers along with it. Most of the flies had died in the first snap of frost earlier that week, but the ones that remained found the two of them and sizzled fatly in the breezeless morning. He tossed his head when they landed on his neck, waving half-heartedly at their stupid black bodies, imagining every buzz was a bee about to sting him. Blaze wandered off as soon as he saw Dante was up, mumbling something about having seen some mushrooms, and Dante waited till he'd merged with the trees to open his pack and then the book. He thought the words would feel different, that the act of reading them after the night before would fill him with some deep and nameless force, but there it was, the same old clean black hand of a meticulous scribe, recounting legends and troubles of succession no one had cared about since the moment the last man who'd known those heroes and kings had died. Dante found it interesting, in its way, was somewhat mystified to be confronted with hard evidence life had been going on for so many hundreds of years, but none of that vague awe explained how he'd been able to summon the darkness. Leaves crackled, and he plopped the book shut and stowed it, watching the tree line.
"Found a few," Blaze said, emerging and holding out a double handful of mushrooms with smooth pink-gray caps and pleated black undersides.
Dante twisted his mouth.
"You'll die if you eat those."
"Right," Blaze said, and when he lifted one to his mouth, Dante bolted up and hit his wrist hard enough to sting them both. Mushrooms flew to all sides.
"It's poison."
He nudged one with his toe, then crushed it into the dirt. "Probably wouldn't kill you, but you'd barf up anything else you put down with it."
"Pardon me for not wanting to starve. We can't all be from the middle of nowhere," Blaze said.
But he dumped the couple he was still holding into the leaves and kicked them away. He brushed his hands clean on the front of his trousers and looked up at the angle of the sun.
"Wasting light."
"I can teach you those things." Dante bent over and slung his cloak and his pack over his shoulders.
"I just want to get the hell out of here."
Blaze started off and kept a couple steps ahead. For a while, they just walked. They'd made about 5 miles from the city before they'd gone to sleep, Dante figured, though they'd been traveling in the dead of night without a road, so who the hell could tell? Blaze kept a quick pace through the sparse grass and falling leaves. Not too smart, Dante thought, not when he'd lost some blood the night before, and there was no chance they were still being followed. He kept his mouth shut. He had the impression Blaze wasn't in a talking mood. They broke off for camp before the sun had finished cradling itself in the mountains. Dante gathered up some tinder, meaning to risk a fire. He doubted the temple men would figure out he'd left the city for another few days. They could spend weeks combing Bressel before they could be certain. He and Blaze were off the trails in open country. There was no rhyme to their course other than a vague northerly direction, so they wouldn't lose total track of the river. 3 more days like today, and they could be 100 miles away. Their trail, as he saw it, was cold from the moment they'd left the men dead in the alley.
"Cold again," Blaze said, shifting the night-facing side of his body toward the fire.
His thick, straight nose threw a broad shadow over the far side of his face. He prodded the dirt with a stick, snapping off a couple inches at a time and tossing them into the flames.
"Yeah."
"It hasn't bled since this afternoon," Blaze said after a moment, peeling back a half inch of the strip of cloth over his left arm.
"That's good. Does it look red?"
"No."
He sniffed at it. "What about you?"
"I wasn't hurt."
Dante watched tiny flakes of ash sail into the smoke and the heat. Just bruises.
I see.
He broke the twig in two and dropped it into the fire. Isn't there a bark you can chew to make it hurt less?
It's not the bark, Dante said. You just can't feel the pain when you're chewing.
Blaze waggled his jaw, and Dante put a hand over his own mouth.
I can't believe you believe that.
Blaze looked away.
Shut up! I'm not a physician!
There is a tree like that, Dante said, squelching his laughter. I'll find some tomorrow, if you want.
I'm going to sleep.
Dante watched him stretch out on the ground, back to the fire, and wondered if he should apologize when it was Blaze who couldn't appreciate a joke. Before he'd made up his mind, the boy was breathing deep and easy. Dante stayed up a while, letting his eyes drift over the branches of the forest. But for however hard he tried, he couldn't make the black speck come back.
Blaze stayed silent the next day, but kept close by, didn't range ahead or disappear into the woods when they sat to eat or rest. The bread ran out at noon. They found a linberry bush, but the berries were fat, wrinkly, an overripe maroon. They took a break at late afternoon, hunkering down in the tall grass of a clearing. Tomorrow they'd head dead east, Dante thought, toward the river. Find a town. From there, Blaze could leave, and Dante could do something. Hitch a boat downriver and make for the coast below Bressel, maybe. Sail for Albarden, in the Western Territories. It wasn't as big as Bressel, but it would be a port town, lots of weird lore from foreign lands, and plenty far from the eyes of the Temple men.
It's working, Blaze said, a hunk of bark sticking from his lips. Tastes like shit.
It's bark.
Animals eat it, don't they? Don't they have tongues?
You can't trust animals. They eat their own vomit.
Dogs, maybe. I've seen dogs eat things from both ends of cats.
Blaze spat flecks of wood, wiped them from his tongue.
But that's why they're dogs.
You're eating bark. What does that make you?
I'm not eating it.
Chewing it up, then. That's even more like a dog.
Dante bit the skin around his thumbnail, tasted blood.
Are you ever going to show me how to use this stupid sword? Or am I just carrying it around to impress all the girls out here?
Go stick it in a goose,
Blaze said, stretching out on the grass. The bark wiggled in his mouth.
I don't think that would be fun for either of us.
Dante leaned back on his elbows. He tried to picture a map of the lands north of Bressel. Wetton was up there somewhere. It was decent-sized. Not that it mattered where they ended up. If they followed the Chancet long enough, they'd find somewhere with some people.
Hold it while we're walking.
What does that even...
What would your mother think of you saying that? My mom's dead, and I'm talking about the sword, idiot,
Blaze said, the bark between his lips jumping with his words.
Carry it in your hand. Swing it around. Get a feel for it.
A sword doesn't react like a knife. It's heavy. It takes a while to respond to whatever it is you're trying to get it to do, and you've got to learn to account for that.
Dante gave him a look. Is that how you learned?
It was wooden, and I was about 10 years younger, but otherwise, yeah.
And then you'll teach me.
Blaze shrugged, hands behind his head.
Why don't you go find us some food?
Why don't you take a dive down a hill?
Dante said. But he got to his feet and walked out of the clearing. The light yellowed as he searched, plucking berries, gathering the bland, low-slung fungus that took more time to clean the dirt from its folds than it did to eat. Orange and red leaves drifted from the boughs and settled to the ground in the windless silence. He spooked a grouse, heart bursting at the thrash of its wings. He could try a few snares, but that would mean setting them up, then remembering where they were and checking them later. Then the several centuries it'd take to pluck feathers hours of work, when he'd already gotten no thanks for all the other food he'd found them.
On the way back to the clearing, he saw the green sprigs of wild carrots and pried them from the soil. They had the end of a rind of cheese left, too. Even if Blaze ate like a pig, it would be enough for dinner and breakfast. The carrots dangled from his left hand and the sword from his right. He whooshed it over the grass, lopping the heads from burgrass and the brittle, straw-like elkwood where it grew in the damper dirt. He'd readied a few choice taunts about how Blaze would starve the first 5 minutes he spent on his own, but returned to find the boy sacked out in the grass. A couple hours of daylight left, he guessed. It would hardly be worth it to wake him up and deal with his nonsense. They could walk by night if they had to. Dante tamped down a patch of grass, plunged down, got out the book. His constant urge was to read through without stopping, but he knew whatever was between its covers was too important to treat like a fruit pastry, something to be devoured as quickly as possible. It deserved patience, deliberance, the kind of disciplined caution Dante'd never managed in any other part of his life. This, though, was different. He could nearly recite the first dozen pages by memory. Already he remembered the tales of the first 100 pages, like the nursery rhymes that stuck in his head whenever he gave them a foot in the door, like the dry-as-sand history of the royal house the churchman had made him read whenever he came late to supper or didn't sweep the corners. He'd separated the proper names from the words of Narashtovic, teased through their context until he had at least a vague concept of their meaning, and in many cases could readily define them. He no longer had to page back to figure out which displaced brother had slain which usurping regent. Its pages were becoming a part of him. With no other leads on an entry into the world of his desire, he read with no less a goal than branding the book's pages on his mind so brightly he'd remember them to the day his eyes went dim. After half an hour, he glanced up and saw a world drenched in shadows. They flowed like water, pooling on the undersides of leaves, drifting through the air as fine as mist, defying the sunlight that still stretched through the branches. He blinked, and his head rushed with the warm, tingly delirium he got when he stood up too fast. Like that, the vision was gone. Blaze's snoring snagged so hard his head jerked. He sat up, rubbing his eyes with his fists. "How long have I been out?"
"I don't know," Dante said. His voice sounded far away.
He cleared his throat. "An hour, maybe." "Why'd you let me do that? I'll have all night to sleep." Blaze bounced to his feet while Dante struggled with a reply. "Let's go. Let's move." The sun slanted through the trees in buttery bands, that thick yellow light Dante'd only seen on cool autumn days, a light that reminded him of the years when he'd been young.
"An hour left till dusk, maybe less."
He could see, but not hear, knots of tiny flies bobbing around each other. Dust motes hung in the windless air. Dante wiped his right eye.
"You did that, you know," Blaze said, swinging the walking stick he'd picked up before they'd started back out.
"Did what?" Dante said.
"Made it go dark."
He avoided Blaze's eyes, suddenly aware that an entire future depended on what he said next. His pause grew too long to pretend he wasn't lying.
"I couldn't do it again," he tried.
Blaze whacked a branch in his way, snapping it clean.
"Too bad. It probably saved us."
"Saved me, maybe. You had a chance without it." Blaze grunted. They walked on.
"What's in that book, anyway?"
"History, and a lot of stories," Dante said, gripping the straps of his back. Blaze stopped, tapping Dante on the shin with his stick, hard enough to welt.
"Bullshit," he said.
That thing you just said is the product of a cow's ass. You wouldn't be risking your life over a bunch of stories. They wouldn't be trying to kill you to get them back either, whoever they is.
He reached for the pack, and Dante drew away.
What's so damn special about it?
I don't know.
Stop it. I don't!
Dante worked the muscles of his jaw, reaching for an explanation he couldn't define.
I heard it was supposed to teach you how to do the things the priests say they can do, throw fire and change the weather and whatever other crazy things, but I haven't read anything that tells you how to do that. So far, it's just like the Ban Naden of Tame.
Blaze snorted. I don't know anyone who read the Ban Naden, and then made a whole street go dark.
Oh, yeah? You want to read it and see?
Dante slid the pack from one shoulder.
No way, Blaze said, jumping back.
He narrowed his eyes to bright slits.
You know what I think it is.
What do you think it is?
I think, he said, raising his blonde brows, it's a spell book.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Blaze raised a palm.
Well, just look at it. It's got a big old bone tree on the cover. What else could it be?
If it's a spell book, it's the worst damn one I've ever read.
Just how many have you read?
There's no such thing.
Dante closed his eyes and sighed through his nose.
Have you ever heard of the Third Scour?
Blaze kicked a rock at his feet.
No, I'm a halfwit.
Then what was it?
One of those things where all the people kill each other? What do you call those?
It was a war, Dante said. A big one.
He paused. From his right he heard the chirr of a red-winged blackbird. Pond nearby, then.
Fish?
He frowned at himself, glanced back at Blaze.
It was little over a century ago. All the sects of the Celicet sort of banded together to wipe another one out. I presume their reasons were perfectly noble.
Most of the histories I've read say the sect was a death cult that served a god named Oron. You know, no respect for babies, sacrificing human life, whatever.
Dante looked away, feeling stupid. Somehow, exposing his knowledge of such boring, dusty histories was like admitting he collected pornographic illustrations of centaurs and mermaids, or saved up his coin for the commemorative daggers of the Explorers Club.
Supposedly, since the serfs no longer respected the law of the righteous gods, they stopped listening to the rule of the king. You know, this life is short and the next one is long, so who cares what that guy says? That sort of thing. There were rebellions, and the one in the Colin Basin worked. They hanged the count, burnt his wife. But when the cavalry came, the renegades didn't have much more than pitchforks and the bows from the manor's armory. The steps of the house were stained so red they painted them crimson to cover it up. If you believe that stuff, that's why the new count established it as his colors.
That is truly fascinating, Blaze said.
I thought it was.
So they splashed a little noble blood around. Peasants do dumb stuff and get killed for it all the time. Why did the whole kingdom have to fight a war?
It wasn't just in the basin, Dante went on.
He bit his teeth together. He'd read hundreds of pages on this stuff back in the books in Bressel. How could he distill all that work into something Blaze would get?
It was everywhere. It was really popular. Probably because its members were saying things that hadn't been said in a long time, but used to be really important. You know Carvajal, right?
Blaze made a blasphemous appeal to the sky.
I'm not 3 years old, Dante.
I was just asking.
So Carvajal took the fire from the North Star and brought it to us, and was exiled from the Belt of the Heavens for it by Tame, right? That's the story you hear when you're a little kid. Well, these are wrong guys. They say Carvajal didn't originally oversee the pole fire, that his half-brother Aron was its keeper.
He gave Carvajal the fire, but they say Carvajal locked him up behind the wall beyond the stars so he could have the credit.
Then he brought the fire to Eric the Dragonat, etc., etc.
Glaze nodded like he was paying any kind of attention. He planted his staff and lowered himself onto a lichen-fuzzed rock.
"Let's sit down over there." Dante nodded to the trees on the right that looked just like the trees to the left, as well as the trees ahead and behind them. "At the pond."
"What pond?
Can't you smell it?"
"No,"
Blaze said, but he stood and waited for Dante to lead the way. He did, ear cocked for the blackbirds, and he had to cut back once, but then it was there, barely more than a stone's throw across, but maybe 5 times as long. Blaze gave him a look, snapping a reed from its banks.
"The birds," Dante said, after a blackbird had called. "They like the water."
"Right." Blaze dropped down on a rock near its edge and wriggled off his boots. He skimmed the tip of the reed over the placid waters. Dante watched the gray missiles of trout drifting near the banks. The flies were thicker here, and the surface rippled with the rings of breaching fish. The water did smell good, now that he was on it. Damp grass and clean mud, the way stones smell when water's always drying from their smooth faces. The important thing is, Aron was the one who guarded the North Star, Dante went on.
"So what?"
"So what? From a theological perspective, that's huge. It undermines the legitimacy of Taim and Gashan, and all of the 12 houses of the heavens. If Aron was the keeper of its fire, then he was pretty much the big chief. Worse yet, if he meant to hand his secrets down to mankind, that means he's the one who deserves our devotion, not Carvajal. And if they got something that big wrong, how can we trust anything they say at all?"
"Yeah, but it's all just stories."
Blaze moved to his knees and overturned a stone. Pale pink worms wagged their tails in the last of the sunlight before sinking into the murk. "They're not real."
"Doesn't their belief in the gods make them real?"
"No," he said. "It makes them stupid." "I guess everyone in the world's stupid then." Dante dropped his eyes to the waters around the reeds. Now and then a trout weaved through their stalks, nibbling at the seeds and bugs caught in the net of plants.
"It doesn't matter if there's stories. The priests tell the stories that will make the people eat out of their hands, and the kings have power because they have the authority to say which priests are right. They don't like it when the stories that give them all this control are threatened."
"Do you know who you sound like right now?" Blaze said, grinning up at him. "The guys back at the almshouse I was with after they'd been drinking all night. The kings this, the priests that. Everyone's stupid but them. Then they sleep it off, and when they wake up, they're back out selling their blades for pennies and getting turned down 9 times out of 10, even then."
"I'm not saying I thought it up."
He threw a pebble at the water near the point of Blaze's reed. A shadow of a fish darted into the deep.
"I'm just trying to explain why people get so mad when you start talking about this stuff."
"Lyle almighty, get on with it."
"So, Aron gave us the fire," Dante said.
"You've said that 5 times.
Blaze sighed. Dante glared at him. The boy sat 3/4 turned, but when he ducked his chin, Dante could see he was smiling.
"The histories of the Third Scar paint him as a bloodthirsty death god. That's how they explain the revolts, that Aron ordered the serfs to kill the lords and the guards and the followers of all the other temples to satisfy his own need for blood.
But see, I don't think that's right. In the cycle, the book, it mentions Aron a lot, and he never talks about wanting people dead. In fact, he's not very interested in us at all. I mean, everyone dies eventually, right? If you're an immortal god, who cares if a soul finds you in the stars today or 20 years from now? Even if he wanted to build an army, and I don't see anything to support that either, it's not like he's in a hurry to do it before he dies of old age."
Blaze plopped a rock into the waters.
I'm going to be seeing her on myself pretty fast if you don't quit being so boring.
Well, does that make sense to you? That a god would be in a rush about a thing like that?